Zorn, Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We do sing the praises of Eric Zorn.
Yeah, when he's here and sometimes when you're not here.
I would hope that when I'm not, yeah. It's not just when I'm here. But behind
it's
my,
mostly when you're here.
If usually behind my back you were not singing my praises.
No, you were supposed to.
I know,
that's part of your contract.
What it says. Come on.
Absolutely. I know you want to talk about Jeff Bezos. Wendy, please tell Eric what you told me on Friday.
Did you watch? What? I don't remember now.
You said, how about those Jeff Bezos pictures?
Oh, I can't wait to see them.
I can't wait to see them.
I'd look.
I don't want to see them.
Really? You want to see them?
It's the journalist in me.
Just the facts. Just the pics, ma'am.
Yeah.
Wow, really? I didn't... I have no
interest...
I could
live my life not seeing them, but if they were out, I'd look
but
at
you're
them.
Curious.
Well, it's... I guess if it's like a... If it's somehow amusingly posed, if it's this whole, if it's a whole body shot and he's amusingly posed, it might be... It might be entertaining to see.
Guys look dorky naked. That's all I gotta
say. No, it's true. It's true. Women are... It's art when it's women. When it's guys, you just go, look at that.
Here's my junk.
That homely, that homely thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you make of this whole story and the way that it has played out?
Well, I am, you know, all behind Jeff Bezos coming out and talking about how he was blackmailed by the Inquirer. I mean, the evidence strongly suggests.
And not just him. Ronan Farrow has
Ronan
a similar
Farrow and
story.
The New Yorker, right. And apparently some guys at the Associated Press say they've also been playing this way. There's some other reporting about Bill Cosby and the Inquirer several years ago, before Bill Cosby actually went to trial, agreed to exchange an interview with him for them agreeing not to run an interview with one of his accusers, and then also not to run any negative stories about him for 2 years. And this is, you know, part of why I have such an increasingly negative response to not just the National Enquirer, but also places that sell the National Enquirer. That it's no longer just this, oh, this is fun. Everyone knows it's like gossip and weird stuff about celebrities being pregnant and who got a facelift and who looks bad in a bikini. The stuff they are putting out is, first of all, it's propaganda. All the stuff they did about Hillary Clinton's got brain cancer and Hillary, you know, all that stuff during the campaign, all the Trump puffery, but now we're learning that they've been withholding stories. Mm-hmm. They did this what they call catch and kill, where they would take, like with Stormy Daniels and the other adult film star whose name I'm blanking on, but they would buy their stories up and say, oh, you know, we want to buy your story, and then they would basically silence them for what was $150,000 something like that. That's not journalism. That is completely not journalism. Mm-hmm. And Alan Dershowitz, the former, I think he's retired Harvard law professor, was on one of the talk shows yesterday morning defending this practice, talking about
the First
Amendment having a, well, he was saying, I mean, he was more talking about it globally in terms of, well, the First Amendment needs a lot of breathing room, and you have to really give a lot of deference to journalistic enterprises. I don't think it's at all a journalistic enterprise to go and tell somebody, we're going to publish a story about you unless you do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
That's just thuggery.
It has
nothing to do with journalism. It's nothing that we would ever do or have done at the Tribune. It's nothing that the Sun-Times or Cranes or Chicago Magazine or any New York Times, Washington Post, none of these publications would ever do that.
Right.
So to protect themselves, to try to use the First Amendment to protect themselves is really despicable. There's another story that was out there about Tiger Woods, that the Inquirer had put a tail on him, that he was apparently having an affair with a waitress at a restaurant or something, and they busted him, they took photos, and they went to him, and this American Media Incorporated, they said, okay, we will not publish this story if you agree to do a cover shoot for us for, I think it was Men's Health magazine that they also published. And so he agreed to do that, and they killed that story. Now, of course, both the effect with Cosby and with Tiger Woods, those efforts in the long run did not prove availing. But when you're looking at the entire sweep of politicians and celebrities who may be compromised by this, there are probably dozens of stories that the Inquirer has held on to.
Are you on board with the Trump angle, people saying that the Inquirer is picking on people that are enemies of Trump. Jeff Bezos, obviously.
Well, that's pretty clear. They've been totally on board with Trump for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Every story you look back through the... I mean, they're the ones who published that ridiculous thing about Ted Cruz's father being part of a...
Kennedy assassination.
Oh, my God.
Right. And again, there's all kinds of stuff about Hillary Clinton being sick.
Yeah.
And it was all... You know, they were just... It was propaganda doing
right.
that, and again, I think at some point you have to say, like, look, if you are, you know, the parent company for Juul, or you're the parent company for I know that they sell it at Juul. I don't know, do they sell it at
Walgreens?
Yeah, they sell it at Walgreens.
Do they sell it at Mariana's?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm not sure. I know they don't at Whole Foods
because there's no carob in it. That's why.
It's too meaty, is what you're saying.
Yep, yeah, that's why.
Bill has derailed my point.
Sorry, I apologize.
I was working myself
but
up
it's always
into a
been
lather,
there, and I don't ever see anybody buying it. I see people picking it up while they're waiting in line, and then they put it back.
There must be a significant cost advantage to these stores to do that. They must sell a lot of
copies. Don't you think the biggest problem with the Inquirer is the fact that every once in a while they do get a story right?
They had
a boss once who once explained that the hardest part about a liar is a liar who once in a while tells the truth.
They got the John Edwards story, and that they nailed that story. They also were very good on the O.J. Simpson story. They were out in front of everybody on that story.
I was looking. So. They also were on top of the Rush Limbaugh and the OxyContin.
Oh, were they?
Addiction too.
I don't think they would do that anymore.
No, that was pre-Trump.
And it's, you know, I give them credit for being out in front of stories like that. Which, I mean, the stories we're talking about, O.J. Simpson and John Edwards, those were relevant stories. The Edwards story in particular was very relevant.
Yep.
It resulted in him going to trial. The problem is that you don't know the extent to which they have other information like this that they have bought and buried because they're trying to protect people. So it sort of skirts the line between skirts the line between journalism and just propaganda.
But there's been stories for years that the Inquirer will have an expose on somebody, and right before they publish it, they'll call that person up and say, here's what we know, and we're going to publish this week, or do you want to give us a story first, and then we'll put that story aside? You know,
I do follow that, but that's very troubling, though.
Yeah.
It's very unethical.
Yeah.
In terms of, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we would never do. What we will commonly do is we'll report out a story, and then when we know all the facts, we will call the subject of the story, and we'll say, here's what we have. Do you have a comment?
Mm-hmm.
And then they will, because we would like to include your side of the story. That's kind of the common approach, which is I think, you know, that's journalism. That's totally fair. But we don't call up and say, hey, you want to give us a tour of your home and some photos and then we'll hold this story. We won't run it. That never happens. That would be a firing offense. So
when you read a story and it says at the bottom that they tried to reach that person, but they were not immediately available for comment, what's the time window on that immediately available?
I don't know what that usually means. I know that in my experience, I don't like to use that immediately because it suggests that
you called once, it rang four times. You go, oh,
my deadline was 5:00. I called at 4:30. I don't like to do that to any source. I don't like to call them right at the beginning because I don't know what the story is. But when I do get the story, when I get my mind around it, then I place a call, and I really hope if they're not immediately available, that means that maybe they were. I mean, they could have been
anywhere.
You know, they could have been sailing on Lake Michigan and out of cell phone range or whatever.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it's to say that. Because when you say someone doesn't comment, there's an implied
guilt.
They're hiding something. So that you do want them, you do want to give them every opportunity to respond to that. It's a fine line because, like I say, if you call right at the beginning of when you're reporting something, you know, it can throw off your reporting. The person can call and tell people not to talk to you or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you do want to give them a fair opportunity. And then
So
when I see that word immediately, I do have that feeling like what does that mean?
I know.
And I feel like there should be like an asterisk and a footnote saying, we made three calls.
Yeah.
Or
a period of 5 hours, we made three calls.
Or we spoke to the spokesman, and the spokesman said he would get back to us and didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough because there are a lot of times, it's not like you get the subjects of your stories on the phone all the time. You sometimes get an intermediary.
Yes.
And they say, well, what's it about? I'll see if I can get back to you. and then they don't get back to you. Mm-hmm. Or they'll say, or you know, there's just one of these, it's kind of this stall, the dance goes on. And so, but I think it's really important to try to be as transparent as you can about that. I think it's important to give, you know, several phone calls if you can, or several emails to try various. Sure. You know, a lot of times now we have Twitter handles for these for famous people, for politicians and so on. We also have their spokespeople. Sometimes we have their personal cell phones.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have email for them. So there's a bunch of ways to reach out.
Sure.
But again, it's important to give them at least some time.
Yeah.
That's true. I never thought of that.
So take a quick break. We'll come back and discuss more things. We'll come back immediately. Immediately. It'll be shocking how quickly we come back. It's Bill and Wendy along with Eric Zorn on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Eric Zorn. Watch me ask the world's fastest question. Watch this. Eric, Virginia, ?
Yeah. Virginia? Yeah.
What's going on in Virginia?
Well, it's just the story keeps unfolding there. We now have a second, apparently somewhat credible accusation of sexual assault against the lieutenant governor there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I don't even know if a week ago at this time, we talked about it a week ago, and I'm not sure that the attorney general come out and admitted that when he was in 1980, when he was in college, he dressed up as a rapper, darkened his face to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my colleague Darlene Glanton today wrote a column in which she basically said, okay, look, maybe before people had some excuse. They didn't know how bad this was. Let's just say right now we're going to declare amnesty on anybody who ever dressed up in blackface. But going forward, no, we have absolutely zero tolerance.
From this day on,
you are gone.
Yeah.
So that we can end this conversation. I mean, I actually think the conversation that we've had, the fact that Northam has hung on, the governor Northam there has hung on so long, has prolonged this conversation in a useful way. There's been a lot of interesting stuff written. The Washington Post, which I think the Tribune reprinted it, a long history of blackface, talk about how, you know, at the University of Virginia, the yearbook there, I think, is called The Cork and Curl, which arguably traces back to using cork to darken your face and the curly wigs that people would put on to do blackface stuff. I mean, this was ingrained in the culture for a long time. And I think that not enough people were aware of how offensive it is and how hurtful it is. And now you can't say that. No one can say that now. Now that we've had this conversation for, like, what is it, 2 weeks? Going on 2 weeks?
Yes, if not
about
longer.
This, you can't say that. And I think that it is actually, I hope it's going to be a net positive. There's an interesting poll the Washington Post released over the weekend that something north of 60% of African Americans in Virginia want Governor Northam to stay on. That they don't feel like this is a career-ending offense. He has declared that he is not going to leave.
Mm-hmm. And has rescinded his apology, by the way. Did you see that today?
He says
he spoke too soon on the apology. He's rescinding the apology.
On the apology for which?
From the very beginning, saying, in the very beginning, if you'll remember, he kind of copped to the fact that it was him and he apologized for doing it.
Right.
And then a day later, he slept on it and he went, you know, I got to be honest, I don't think that was me.
You're right. And so he's rescinded that?
No, that part remains intact. It was the apology for dressing up that way, because then he says, I don't think that was me.
Oh, okay.
But it would be on his Facebook page if it wasn't him, would it?
But he
yearbook.
Has...
Yearbook page. Right, there were no Facebooks.
No.
He does admit to dressing up as Michael Jackson.
He does.
That he's sure
he
about.
He seemed almost proud of that.
It's his whole evolving story in those first couple of days was weird. And if they can establish that he was lying about that, that he actually is in that photo, and we get evidence, more evidence that suggests
then
that he
has
was,
to be
then
gone.
He has to go, because that's a fresh offense. And this relates to what I wrote over the weekend about Bill Daley. You know, there's this allegation about Bill Daley and the insurance exam that took 46 years ago. It's been, that the Tribune in a front page story on Thursday, this big long thing about all the shenanigans that went on to get him his insurance license. And
that the answers were in a different cursive.
Yeah, it was pretty clear.
Coloring.
Pretty clear that somebody cheated on his behalf.
Yeah.
And it's 46 years ago. You say, okay, he was in his 20s.
And this wasn't the first time he took that exam, right?
Yeah, he failed it the first time.
Right.
And so you got to say, okay, well, that's so long ago. And the question is, okay, now I don't think he's lying about it. I think he's just saying, let's move on. He doesn't want to address it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a sort of a new offense. I think you need to say, okay, look, that was 46 years ago. I did something I'm not proud of, and I do want to look forward, but that's not me anymore, and it isn't him anymore. It was so long ago.
But you should address it. I agree with you.
But it's how you deal with it today, and that's the problem that I have with it, and that's the problem we should have with Northam, and then we should have with the Attorney General, whose name I'm forgetting there.
Are you surprised that 60% of African Americans in Virginia say, no, we want to keep
this guy? I was really surprised because there was such a deafening cry right at the beginning for him to resign. It seemed like everybody wanted him to quit.
Right.
And now that we see these polls, that actually a greater percentage of white people want him to resign, which is a very interesting result.
They say he's been very good for race relations in Virginia, that his record is very, very good.
His record, as far as I have read, has been good on that subject. Yeah. That he's been a progressive voice.
Mark Herring, is that who it is?
Herring is the name, yeah, the Attorney General. And so the question is, of course, if the lieutenant governor has to go, and again, I think I want to sort of bracket off these allegations of sexual assault against, which are much more recent, against the lieutenant governor. If those seem fairly credible. I'd like to see them investigated, but those seem very credible. He's got to go because that is not, first of all, it's a crime. It was never a crime to dress up in blackface. It's a crime. What we're talking about are crimes, and they're much more recent. And I don't want to include too much of that, you know, bygones or amnesty into this part of the discussion. But if you've got these guys who in the 80s did this and express regret about it now, I think it's time to move on for that. But again, I think it's good that we've had this conversation. And nobody now in America, no white person in America, has any excuse for doing this ever again.
From now on.
Let's hope that this is like the stake in the heart of this tradition, which is an ugly one.
Yep. So. Eric, thank you.
Good to see you guys.
Would you mind if people read you in the Chicago Tribune?
I'll allow it.
All right. Good. That's good to hear.
I will allow it.
That's Eric Zorn. He says you can read him in the Tribune, so go ahead. Coming up, the stories that matter with Dave Schwann from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.